Well, my broadcasting hero is a guy called David Frost, the late David Frost. He was a wonderful interviewer who never dominated conversations, but was always in the background and facilitated. I think he really had it in pulling out the best of, well, people from Richard Nixon to anybody else of that era. But David Frost was also a comedian, and he had a program called That Was the Week That Was, which was really fabulous to watch. Well, I guess David Bacher and I have That Was the Month That Was in the investment world. We're not quite as funny as David Frost and John Cleese and all of the Monty Python gang, but I can tell you the cartoons make up for it. And what a month it was, David, in the month of June, which is just behind us. All kinds of cartoon-type operations. Mr. Biden's performance in the debate, just mind-blowingly poor, that he he's saying, well, he had jet lag. And the inside story that is coming out was actually he would have resigned because he is a little bit not all there anymore, but his wife wants to carry on running the country. Who knows with these things? But maybe your big take of the past month, I suppose, has got to be local, with the whole government of national unity having a deal put together and the local stocks way outperforming the international markets, but not surprisingly, because we missed the Chernobyl option and we're on a path which potentially is to prosperity.
Indeed, Alec. We said on the show last month that there was a good chance we could be reporting some big numbers for local assets come June, and that was certainly what we got. The recent elections, as you said, sparked optimism, leading to a very strong rally in local assets. If you look at the main asset classes, our local equities was up 4%, but probably more astounding was our bond market, which was up 5%. And if you look at the breakdown of those equities, financials was the standout performer, up 14.5%. So there certainly was a lot of excitement with the results of the elections, and there's still a lot of skepticism, but for the time being, it was certainly a good month for investors.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. I've got an interview later today with Helen Ziller, who's the chair of the Federal Council of the DA. She's got to be made of steel, this lady, because not only has she been through the past, 3, 4, 5 weeks of negotiating with the ANC, now she's got the hot potato of Gauteng to deal with, where it seems almost like there's it's about a rogue branch of the ANC that is doing its own thing, it seems. Even though they got hammered in the election, they're still trying to run the place as they were. So it'd be interesting to get her inside track on that. But what we've seen so far is it's going to be a bumpy road. This coalition governance is not going to be easy. Or hang on, not coalitions. It's officially the government of national unity, and correctly so, because we do have more than just the ANC and the DA in the ministries.
I agree. I mean, people are very excited about coalitions, and I think it is the lesser evil, so to speak. But, running governments with different ideologies and agendas also has significant negatives. And there's, these parties have limited authority and flexibility to act, and they're continuously trying to appease their factions. And, I think the prayer for all investors and the majority of South Africans is for personalities to take a back seat and for the interests of the country to be the ultimate priority. So hopefully we can have some good leaders from all parties trying to put South Africa as their number one agenda item.
You know why I've got hope on this? And that is, it's from something that I guess most people won't really get. But when I have visited the World Economic Forum in Davos, something that really struck me was I went to a press conference with David Cameron before he was prime minister, and man, he was unimpressive. He was really the kind of guy that you'd think, would I employ this fella? He stumbled his way through, a little bit like a Joe Biden in the debate. A couple of years later, when he had become prime minister, he was a completely different kettle of fish. So hopefully, power, or responsibility rather, is going to rub off positively on the politicians here in South Africa. And they will elevate their approach from the incredible pettiness that we see from time to time into more statesman-type behavior.
Certainly, I mean, it just seems when you listen to the rhetoric out there, it's a lot about personalities, and I think that is worrying. I think that is the nature of politics to some degree. It's not just a South African phenomenon, but we are at a crossroads, and we do need leaders to step up. The time is now, and hopefully we get that.
All right, so let's get into our monthly decoding, as you call it. And here we go. Good, very, very strong market. The bull is, well, certainly full of beans, feeling his oats, maybe eating good kukuyas, strong grass, and definitely still on the rampage. The bear's nowhere to be seen at the moment.
Yes, every month we try and make light of what is a very serious industry and probably the most serious responsibility one can have in managing people's retirement fund savings. So, you know, it is a complicated industry. So we're trying to just make it a little bit more fun. So the theme we went with this month in Corian Decodes was wildlife. And it was appropriate to start with the bull market. And it certainly has been. The global equities are up almost 20% over the year. And it's been a phenomenal run, a phenomenal decade for equities, particularly in the US and particularly for tech shares.
Since I was a young journalist and following the markets and the movements in equity prices going back some decades now, the one thing that I recall very well was in a bull market, news tends to be interpreted positively. In a bear market, the same news will be interpreted negatively. And I think we had an example of that last night, David, with the Tesla results coming out. They were interpreted positively, even though the sales were down. So, and the reason for the positive interpretation was because Elon Musk says we're going to get autonomous taxis or self-drive taxis. It's just around the corner. They're going to have an announcement in August. Share price up 10%. In a bear market, you could be almost certain that traders would have looked at the decline in the sales and said, knock it down 10%. So there can be big, big differences depending on sentiment. And right now, the sentiment is bullish.
100%. At Corian, we believe over the long term, valuations will play out. But over the short term, sentiment drives markets, and you can't ignore that. So you've got to know which part of the cycle you are in at present stage. But at the same time, just because we're in a bull market doesn't mean that's going to be the same market a month or a week later. So you've got to be a bit cautious, stick to your long-term principles, but also know which game you're currently playing. And at the moment, the market is very, very much receptive to any little bit of good news.
And South Africa, even more so.
Correct. It's a nice change that we labeled this cartoon springing bock, because on a dollar weighted basis, we were the standout performer, up 9% on the back of a strong equity market and a strong currency. And so that was, as I said earlier, fueled by our financial shares, our South African Inc. shares, which took the election results in a very positive manner.
Interesting to see that the second better, of these five markets, the second best performer was India, which also had an election. And the election results there being a little more surprising than they were here in South Africa. And yet, investors enjoying that as well. I guess competitive politics is a good thing when you have had absolute power vesting in one or two parties in India and here in South Africa in the ANC for so long. More competition means, I suppose, more accountability, and investors like that.
India is actually probably, with the exception of the United States, the standout investment region over the last 3 to 5 years. If you look at its weighting compared to China in the emerging market in this index, China used to be 3 times the size of India. Now they're almost like for like in terms of its weighting. So that economy is going through a major growth spurt, good policy, a reasonably stable government, and lots of innovation. And you're seeing that in how it's rallied. I will caution investors, though, that the market is priced for that kind of outcome. So from a Corian perspective, we've actually been decreasing our weight to India of late, but it certainly has helped our investors up until now.
Here's one thing that the message that I would pull out of what you've just said is, let's start looking at Indian companies and start understanding Indian companies in the same way as we as South African investors have looked to the US and a lesser extent Europe over the past decade or so. And now we've been looking at China, maybe in the last 5 years. India is a place to start opening our eyes to. But I love this cartoon that you put together on the Lion King. We've most people have had the privilege of watching the movie, or some of us even seeing the West End production. NVIDIA, the new king. Wow. Well, it's been a huge performer for the BizNews portfolios, that's for sure.
Correct. NVIDIA is certainly the new king of Wall Street. It became the largest company in the world, I think, on the 18th of June. It has a market cap of $3.3 trillion and recently surpassed Microsoft and Apple. So, you know, their milestone was largely driven by the massive surge in their chips, which account for about 80% of all chips used in data centers now. So, I think it's gone from $40 to up 200%. So, it's over a 1 year period, and that is just unbelievable growth. So, who would have thought 5 years ago, most people didn't even really know about NVIDIA, and now it's the world's biggest company.
There are many skeptics. Somebody who works in the media field, where we're seeing right up front the impact of the artificial intelligence revolution. If you've got a lockhold on this market and the way that it's transforming industries in the same way maybe as the internet transformed industries, it might take longer than we think right now, but if you got a lockhold like NVIDIA has, then best to be riding that horse, at least to some degree. But do you think it's gone too far, David?
You know, you look at history, when you have such dominance in one area or one industry, it never lasts forever. You know, it's just the nature of capitalism. Competition comes, innovation comes, policies start being introduced. So if you had to, you know, use the past as a guide for the future, I would be quite skeptical. I do think that the ability for other companies to compete immediately, given the moat, given the amount of investment needed to match the latest NVIDIA processing power, is certainly going to be a hurdle for some time. But for how long? Is that indefinite? History would say it's not indefinite. So you've got to take into account the valuations that NVIDIA is trading at, and is that justified? And from our perspective, we're starting to think no, and rather diversify against other shares. And there's a lot of attractive shares elsewhere in the world, which we think are worthy of putting our clients' assets into.
What we did in the BizNews portfolio was felt exactly the same way as you do, and that was when the price was compared, well, it was 50% below where it is today. We sold half of the NVIDIA shares, put some money in the bank, and said the rest of it, whatever, it can just ride. And it's been a good call, because at these levels, if you're up to 270%, you would be very cautious about at least taking some profits. But here's the other big story to come from the United States. Did you watch any of that debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump? And I ask this because investors have been having the Trump trade almost on the basis that Biden cannot be reelected on that performance, that even his own party, more than half of the people are saying he hasn't got it anymore. So the debate itself was very eye-opening.
Certainly watched it. It was very sad to see. I think, I wouldn't say I'm a Biden fan, but I do think he has served his country with good intent over a long period of time, and at heart is a good person. So I might not agree with his policies, but it was sad to see someone who's, you know, potentially in a 1 or 2 hour period debate has his legacy shaken. One needs to, with all things, know when's the time to retire, when the time is to quit. And I would imagine everyone got the feeling after watching that he took the wrong route.
And you look at the man personally, his one son who was headed for greatness as well, died of cancer. His other son, who's a bit of a reprobate, got into big trouble and has been in the media headlines over an extended period. So quite apart from running a country, you've got all of that going on in-house. Wow. I saw him in Davos, David, and some years back when he was the vice president to Obama, and was so impressed. Such a strong character. And to see him in that debate with Donald Trump was just, it was heartbreaking. Anyway, it is what it is. Let's move on to the US debt. You have a nice big elephant on the screen now, talking about US debt, which it focuses the mind when you have a look at the way that it's expanded in the last 20 years.
Correct. And we labeled that cartoon the elephant in the room, US debt. And if you look at the numbers, it has grown from just over, $7 trillion in 2004 to 20 years later to, about $34 trillion. And that is a significant growth in debt. And, investors must realize you're borrowing at the expense of your children and grandchildren, or at the expense of the future. So while it can fuel growth in the short term, it does need to be paid back. And having significant amounts of debt could be inflationary, could be at the expense of future policies or infrastructure spend. So that debt number is not going away. So while you may see great economic growth coming from the state, one has to temper that enthusiasm against what the impact will be with the future generations and having to pay back that debt.
And service it. I was seeing something this in the past couple of weeks. The problem in Kenya is that they have invested heavily into infrastructure funded by the Chinese and the IMF and so on. But the problem is they got to repay that debt. And they are here in South Africa, we complain because 18% of our budget now goes to pay debt, whereas in Kenya, it's 38%. In the US, still relatively small by those standards, but you can get into that debt trap pretty quickly. Okay, so on the JSE, having a look at that, it's been a good month for financial shares, but resources continue to be under pressure.
Correct. One can explain it when you have a strengthening currency. A local currency was up, I think, about 3 to 4% over the month. So, the South African shares earn their revenue predominantly in dollars. So that would be a headwind for the resource shares. But you did also have some commodities come off. The platinum, palladiums also came off, which, a lot of our resources shares get their revenue from those commodities. So that put it a bit under pressure. But nothing too much to worry about given the rand strength. I think the highlight just really is how emphatic was the rally in our financial shares.
Indeed, more than 20% for a couple of them, and the big banks almost 20%. These are months to remember.
Correct. And these months are the months that can make break an asset manager's track record, because you've got such a dichotomy of sectors in South Africa. that if you're going overweight resources at the expense of financials, you would significantly have outperformed last month. And while 1 month investing is nothing that you should focus on, investing is about the long term. When you have such switches in the performance of sectors, it really does impact your performance. So fortunately, from a Corian perspective, we were overweight those sectors. But you also got to bear in mind that you're investing over the long term, and that election could have gone either way. And if you got it wrong, you don't want to risk your client's assets on the decision of the election that could have gone either way. So, you know, from our view, managers that have really outperformed or underperformed in last month, to a great extent, you've got to also question what risk they were taking and if that is aligned to how you want asset managers to look after your assets. It's right, getting it right, but on a marginal call, but just also realize that it could have gone the other way too.
And you did include in your pack Brait, a company that is controlled by a super entrepreneur in Christo Visa, who must be wondering now what the heck he did to get involved here in the first place. It has been, as you call it, a wild dog. Explain.
Brait probably did one of the worst corporate transactions in South African history. It bought New Look. I think it paid about 16 billion rand, there or thereabout. And within a couple of years, wrote that investment down to zero. So that plus its hard debt and some other underperforming assets really took that share price from the 150s to less than 1 rand today. So it was a sad story for investors. And yes, Christo Visa did get involved at I think about 2015, 2016, maybe around there. So that hasn't been a good call for him. But it certainly was, I would say, you know, a very sad story for investors.
Don't swim against the tide. Even when they did buy New Look, which is a retailer, fashion retailer in the UK, it was already apparent that high street fashion retailers were under pressure. Of course, it's very easy when you look back in hindsight, but don't try and swim against the tide. And here in South Africa, big story. We started off with it talking about the ructions still that are continuing in the Gauteng provincial government. What's your thinking about the government of national unity and the getting together of all the parties, but primarily the ANC and the DA?
I think it's going to present a lot of challenges, but I do think it's a lesser of two evils from a market perspective, from an investing perspective. I think it has the potential to be a good thing, but it does require good leadership and people to do what is right for the country and not right for the party. And a lot of investors, including myself, still have some doubt on the ability of investors to, or of our leaders to do that. There's a lot of leaders there who, rightly or wrongly, have got bad reputations with other parties, and you know, one just hopes that either those people can take a back seat or those people can adopt to the needs of the country. And as I said earlier, the time is now for good leadership, not for fighting, not for things being leaked into the press, but for people to actually really put the interests of the country first.
Yeah, I guess the David Cameron factor, as I was mentioning a little bit earlier, may be just like what happened in Davos. We'll get the David, that our politicians will actually move up, step up to the plate and make us all proud. David Bacher with Corian, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.